Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, looky here. Friday on the front porch. It's kind of an open question as to what kind of a show we'll have this evening. This is The Horn, by the way, headonradionetwork.com. Your home for a little something we call conversation radio. Now, I say it's an open question because we've been having the interweb tubes gave me fits all last night to the point that you'll notice if you downloaded the podcast, it was in two pieces. How bad it got. Managed to, well, I've still got more work to do, but I felt like we had to put some of the, can you tell I'm a little scatterbrained right now? Honest to God, I don't handle it well when the technology turns on us. But no, it's Friday on the front porch. It's light and relaxed and fun, and I didn't want to miss it. Weekend coming, you know, have to walk around all weekend long because nobody, poor Agnes is out there. Find somebody to talk to, Bob. Stop filibustering at me. You get the idea. Now, this is The Horn. It is the first day of March. Don't know what it's like where you are, but we're trying to figure out if March is coming in like a lion or not. It's snowing and wet and sloppy and miserable outside. The state road folks must be expecting some sort of misery because they've got all the roads are clear, but they've got all the professional speaker here. They've got all the snowplow trucks out, spreading salt and so forth. And the snow is, the snow's beginning to blow around, and Lord only knows what that'll do to our internet connection. Didn't get just a whole lot of, well, I was on with tech support last night as soon as the show ended. Didn't yield a lot of anything, but you can understand how you might have a hard time getting an internet-based radio show out when your upload speed is 0.26. Yeah, really. But there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff that needs discussed before we head into the weekend. This is, of course, Sequester Day, and you know. Tonight, in the skies over central West Virginia, well, there won't be an air traffic controller on duty at Yeager Airport. I don't know about you, but I couldn't feel not better about that. But no, we've got, you know, there's some fun to be had, and there's some fairly serious stuff out there. And more than anything else, there's conversation to be had. Yeah, that's a good idea, Betsy. I had tweeted I didn't think I was going to be on the air, so now I need to tweet that I am. Stand by, please. Done, Betsy. Thank you. Good idea. Now, as noted, it is Friday on the front porch. And that means that we have an open opportunity to go just about anywhere you want to go with the discussion. And, you know, we tried last week the experiment of bringing on multiple conversationalists. Again, and it seemed to work out pretty well. So if you want to try that, we can do it. We can do it. I've got a leftover from prayer meeting that just, I got to get it out there. Because it is Friday on the front porch, and there's enough grim business out there. And by grim, I mean creepy. And, let's have a giggle. I've come to think of these little things as our moment with Marion. And I don't mean, like, Marion from Happy Days. I mean Marion Pat Robertson. I'm guessing this guy has never worn a piece of used clothing in his life. But he answers mail, and you know how people call C-SPAN and just drop the F-bomb for fun because they know that there's no delay. Honest to God, I've come to the conclusion that people have started writing notes to Pat Robertson just to hear him say something stupid. Because when you hear the subject matter of this moment with Marion, you may find yourself in the same place I was, asking, really, honest to God, are there people who live in the United States of America in the second decade of the 21st century who worry about things like this? Because your intellectual, reasonable mind wants to say, well, heavens no! Well, either they exist, or somebody is providing us with a darn good time with Marion. Answering a letter from a viewer who wants to know what her obligations are with regard to used clothing from Goodwill. Really.
Pat, this is Carrie, who says, I buy a lot of clothes and other items at Goodwill and other secondhand shops. Recently, my mom told me that I need to pray over the items, bind familiar spirits, and bless the items before I bring them into the house. Is my mother correct? Can demons attach themselves to material items?
Well, see, I think we missed the precursor question. Pat, are there really such things as demons? Of course, he's made a multi-million-dollar, if not billion-dollar, empire off of convincing people that there are, and that he has the power to tell them what to do. You, demon, over there, Beelzebub. Yeah, I want to see you do a Virginia Reel. You over there, Azreel, I want to see you do a dance on the head of a pin. Because in the name of Christ I command ye. Sweet suffering. So there's the setup. There's the question. In the second decade of the 21st century, of the current era, the common era, can demons attach themselves to material items Whatever shall I do with that stuff I buy at Goodwill? Which, of course, raises the question, do demons attach themselves? What, if you pay retail, there are no demons? I'm a little at a loss here. The answer's got to be a dandy.
I heard a story in I believe, the Philippines, a person who went to Thailand. There was.
Which is it, Marion? Because it's going to come as a real shock to people in Thailand and the Philippines to find out that they're the same country, being how they're separated by a few thousand miles and everything. But, well, skip a bit, brother.
There's a witch who had prayed over a particular ring and asked for a spirit to come into it. Well, this Philippine girl was so attached to this ring, she had to buy it. She bought it, and all hell broke loose. So she finally recognized what it was. So,
reckon that could have been because she spent the rent money on the ring?
No. Can demonic spirits attach themselves to inanimate objects? The answer is yes. But I don't think every sweater you get from Goodwill has demons in it.
Just a few of them. Somebody shoot him in the neck with a Thorazine dart.
But in a sense, your mother's just being super cautious, so hey.
Super cautious or superstitious? You pick. Just being super cautious. Bless your used clothing.
It didn't go hurt you anything to rebuke any spirits that happen to have attached themselves to those clothes.
Demon of Dacron, I say in the name of Jesus Christ, get out! Get out, Dacron demon! Evil spirit of Nylon, be gone! Of course, you know, you never know what you're going to find at Goodwill. There may be clothing there that is made of blended fibers like Dacron and polyester, or nylon and lycra, or cotton and polyester, and you know, you can get stoned to death for wearing that stuff. Possessed vintage clothing. You know, there's a big market in the like 1940s vintage lingerie. I imagine that's really really demonic. Yeah, Ron's with the program. Ron and Raleigh says, I know this. Demons may not attach to clothes, but the devil wears Prada. Bob, have you been possessed? You sound like Pat Robertson. Oh, that was really Pat. Hey, Waggy, thanks for getting us started this evening. That's awesome. Thank you very much. But do you see where do you see where we're going? I mean, that's the tip of tonight's iceberg of goofiness. Sergi noting. Good grief. No wonder Stephanie Miller calls Pat Robertson evil Uncle Chuckles. Yeah, your mother-in-law is just being cautious. Well, you know, or insane. Now, whoever's out there sending these loaded questions to Pat Robertson, well, sure, Texas Betsy. She says, Bob, I check even my secondhand clothing to be sure that plant and animal fibers haven't been woven together. I understand. Those are the rules you're supposed to live by. But the Dominionists, and particularly the Reconstructionists of the so-called Christian movement, want to stone people to death over this stuff. I would hazard a guess that Judaism has probably proceeded past that at this point. Unless you're in certain parts of Brooklyn. Yeah, I heard that story on Malloy last night, too. Now, like I said, that's just where it starts. And then there's San Diego. And you hate telling a story about this, like this about San Diego, but really, you expect this to come out of Alabama Stan, or Mississippi Stan, or Oklahoma Stan, or Talibandiana. But no, San Diego, where Stephen and Jennifer Sedlock are the parents of some young children. And we've talked about this before on the program, but now it's sort of blossomed into the toxic thing that it is. And the National Center for Law and Policy, which is a right-wing religion industry front lawyering group, is going after the school district out there. Because Jennifer and Stephen Sedlock's cheerings are having their religious freedom violated. Yes. Because the school system is teaching them the demon yoga. Mm-hmm. Now, it sort of calls to question what happens if you happen to buy a secondhand pair of yoga pants for your young daughter at the Goodwill, and then she goes and... Oh, my goodness, it'd be worse than anything we ever saw in any of the Ghostbuster movies. That river slime. No, really. They're going, their lawyer, who is a real, live, honest-to-God, neo-maxi, zoom-dweeby religious fundamentalist, a person by the name of Dean Broyles, made the claim that the yoga program in the Encinitas schools is a, quote, breach of public trust, setting a dangerous precedent. Yeah, we can't be having children being all limber and healthy and stuff. We need them fat and slovenly and obese and juvenile diabetes for Jesus' sake, right? This is frankly the clearest case of the state trampling on the religious freedom rights of citizens that I personally witnessed in my 18 years of practice as a constitutional attorney, said lawyer Dean Broyles, who apparently lives under a rock. Now, never mind the fact that Stephen and Jennifer Sedlock had the option of opting their children out of the yoga program and letting them become obese and maybe juvenile diabetics. No, they don't just not want their own children to participate in yoga. They want to make sure no one's children participates in yoga in Encinitas. Dean Broyles says he wants to restore traditional physical education to the district. Get those little brats out there, hand them some red rubber balls, and let them start knocking the snot out of each other playing dodgeball like God told us to in Philippians 4:20. Oh, dear me. Yoga. They're on yoga now. Now, meanwhile, of course, lawyer Dean Broyles has no problem whatsoever with an effort underway in Talibandiana to require the recitation of the Lord's Prayer at the beginning of each school day. No, heck no, that's not, well, that's, That's a recognition of our deeply held religious heritage. Oh, for pity's sake. Yoga? Really? Learning to stretch? Yeah, but what about that part when they say Om a lot? Isn't that them calling their demon God? Because, you know, their gods are demons. Just ask that jackass of a general. Oh, what was his name? The one who said, "We beat him in Somalia because our God was bigger than their God and stronger." Yeah. Senator Dennis Cruz is the creep in Talibandiana who wants to make children recite the so-called Lord's Prayer every day. I mean, we've got listeners in Talibandiana. Are there no Muslims in Talibandiana? No Jews? None? Zero? No atheists? No freethinkers? No non-believers? Cruz's bill was introduced on the first day of the session this year. In order that each student recognize the importance of spiritual development in establishing character and becoming a good citizen, the governing body of a school corporation or the equivalent authority of a charter school may require the recitation of the Lord's Prayer at the beginning of each school day. The prayer may be recited by a teacher, a student, or the class of students. How about people who don't want to? Well, the heathens can be tied to a stake and set fire. But yoga, that yoga thing, yoga. Well, that's the. Wait. That's the doorway to disbelief. Yoga is a gate, is a gateway exercise. Next thing you know, they'll be praying to some elephant god and trying to give him peanuts. Marty writing in says, "I say, you want prayer in schools? Fine. Every religion's prayer must be recited." That gets their panties tied in a wad. No, only the real God's prayer. Because the rest of them are demons that spend most of their time inhabiting mixed blend sweaters and secondhand yoga pants. Rum and Coke? Raw ether? Anything? That's where we are. But I told you there was some gross stuff, too. We're equal opportunity. And so we criticize creepy Democrats as well as creepy Republicans. And sometimes, and granted, it's about 100 to 1. For every 100 creepy Republicans, one creepy Democrat will rise to the surface. State Representative Ernest Hewitt is a Democrat from Connecticut. He was Deputy Speaker of the Connecticut House of Representatives, but he got that title taken away from him because of a little something that he was heard saying that was recorded during a hearing. The legislative hearing was in regard to continued funding for the Connecticut Science Center. A 17-year-old student, a young woman, came to the Connecticut House of Representatives to ask for funding to be continued, renewed. She described herself as usually a very shy person, but she said that the program at the Connecticut Science Center had enabled her to teach children about certain things like snakes. And that occasioned the response of Representative Ernest Hewitt. Here's the audio.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
How you doing? My name is... I'm a senior at high school, and I am here on behalf of the Connecticut Science Center. I am a teen ambassador. I've been there for 2 years, and it's been a great experience for me. I would like to start by saying that at the first time when I got the job, I got it through my school, and I thought it was a great thing to do. I'm like, oh, money, cool. You know, what teenager doesn't want money, right? So, but I never realized that during the whole process that I would end up finding myself. I ended up working with the most amazing other teens. I was able to build relationships with them, and I was able to communicate with other people because I'm usually a very shy person, and now I'm more outgoing. I like to just jump at any opportunity that I can get, and because of Science Center, they provide us with that skill.
This is charming, isn't it? This is what we hope to have education actually accomplish. Children bring their innate talents as well as their fears into a learning situation and teaching professionals develop those talents and make of the young person something perhaps they didn't even know they had the capacity to be. I like the very idea of the Connecticut Science Center. Sounds like they've got a wonderful program with their teen ambassador program where teens apparently teach younger children. It sounds like a good approach, doesn't it? I don't know who this young woman is, but I'm certainly charmed. She sounds like she's on her way to really doing something with her life. When it comes to speaking in public, I always remember that study that was done, survey or whatever, many, many years ago, in which people were asked to rate the things they feared the most. Overall, the results of the survey yielded that the thing that people were second most afraid of was death. The thing that they feared the most, however, was having to speak in public. And so here we have a young woman of 17 years who has overcome her fears and is actually speaking to the legislature, the governing body of the state of Connecticut. Good for her. Good for her.
Not only there, but also at other places like school and also outside of there as well. And during that time, I was able to discover that I really love working with children. It was so much fun for me. I was able to teach little children about certain things like the snakes that we have. I was able to share that with them and the turtles that we have, which are amazing and they're awesome. And just the kids, they're just great. So I want to do something towards that with working with children when I get older.
Chalk up what appears to be a giant success for the Connecticut Science Center. This young woman has discovered what some of us would refer to as a calling. We've all had that happen to us from time to time, right? You're going through life, especially when you're young, and you suddenly realize that there's something that you just feel drawn to do. Hopefully it's a good thing that will benefit society as a whole, as well as enriching one's own life, right? Did you hear how she... we can't even see her, but you can hear her smiling when she talks about the turtles, can't you? I think most of us, and I know I'm kind of guessing my way into Texas Betsy's mind, but I'm guessing we say a little silent, you know, hooray, and sometimes we say it out loud, like I just did, when we hear something being done right by a young person, a child, that hopefully will advance them into a meaningful adulthood and a life well lived, right?
And also this past summer, I was able to do team robotics. I have never done robotics before, but I was eager to learn. And I was able to also meet other teams as well that they came in, and they're just so smart, and they were able to teach us. We were able to teach them about the Science Center. We collaborated. We worked on a project together. And during that project, we were able to come up with an idea to be able to work on the floor of what we were going to present. And during that time, we had conflicts, but I felt like at the end, we were able to see what we thought as this idea come to life. And that was so much fun for us as well. And it was just a great experience overall. And I'm proud to be able to know them and to love them and to cherish that friendship on in the future.
Still good, right? There's not a soul who must have been in that hearing room. It wasn't saying, and apparently Texas Betsy didn't even think it. She said it out loud. She told me in the chat room, check your Google. She sounds lovely, says Texas Betsy. Indeed she does. Everybody in that room must have been thinking the same thing. Well, everybody but one.
So it sounds like you had a wonderful experience.
I did, and I learned a lot. Like, I never thought that I would be able to be, you know... I never liked snakes, and but I end up loving them. Like, they're my best friends. Alex and Austin, they're awesome, and little Miles, and they're so much fun. And you know what? Another thing, too, is, like, I just love the fact that I can have other people also overcome that fear, because I've had so many adults that come up to me like, I'm scared of near me, but that was fun.
How many things got done right here? Most of us, many of us, if not most of us, have a phobia over snakes for a variety of reasons. All cultures don't. But insofar as one of the founding myths of the mythology that we sort of... that white Europe sort of glommed onto, it gave us a miserable fear of serpents. You know, once upon a time they could talk. And I guess some people think that they still do. I mean, Jesus Christ, if there's demons in a secondhand rugby shirt, well, everything's open, right? And you can hear the happy laughter, right? I mean, what's not to love? Sure seems lovable. But remember, there's a sort of a... Well, it's not a punchline. I mean, this is just embarrassing. Well, it's embarrassing and kind of sickening, too. Because we are, after all, talking about the Deputy Speaker of the Connecticut House of Representatives. Please. So we'll go back.
Well, we thought as a, you know, as this idea come to life. And that was so much fun for us as well. And it was just a great experience overall. And I'm proud to be able to know them and to love them and to cherish that friendship on in the future.
So it sounds like you had a wonderful experience.
I did, and I learned a lot. Like, I never thought that I would be able to be, you know, I never liked snakes, and but I end up loving them. Like, they're my best friends. Alex and Austin, they're awesome, and little Miles, and they're so much fun. And you know what? Another thing, too, is, like, I just love the fact that I can have other people also overcome that fear, because I've had so many adults that come up to me like, I'm scared, don't put that near me, but that was fun. I like it. That was fun for me.
That's very good. You're a great spokesperson for the Connecticut Science Center.
Thank you.
Seems like a good investment for the state. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Hewitt.
And if you're bashful, I got a snake sitting under my desk here.
Got it? If you're bashful, I got a snake sitting under my desk here. Anybody. The hell was that for? To a 17-year-old young woman. If you're bashful, I've got a snake sitting under my desk here. Now, after the crap storm began out of that remark, which is hard to interpret any other way except the way you're probably interpreting it, and God knows how I did. Representative Hewitt tried to ameliorate things. He said, "Oh, that's not. I don't. I'm sorry. I said what I did. That's not what I meant to say. What I meant to say was, if you're shy, then I have an acre of land in the Everglades." If you're bashful, I got a snake sitting under my desk here. If you're shy, then I have an acre of land in the... You know, it's funny. There aren't any homonyms in there. Honest to God. Does everything in this country have to be rendered tawdry? Really? Snake sitting under my desk. I would expect that, maybe, of one of her, what, high school junior classmates? But of an elected representative, please. But that's kind of what kind of day it is. And more. We may be at this for a while. So far, so good with the interweb tubes. And by the way, thanks to two individuals, Waggy and Ryan, we're only $20 from doing from taking care of tonight's beginning. We're done fundraising for today, because I forgot about Randy's official beginning of the month contribution. We actually have caught up some with the end of February, which didn't quite end. No, this is amazing. Thank you. Yeah, Marty, this guy's a Dem. I don't know if he's a blue dog or what, but no, he's a Democrat. He was the deputy speaker of the Connecticut House. Go sort that out. Maybe that... It's just men being men. Actually, Cassie, she's in Connecticut. But yeah, Cassie says, "I love that girl in her science program. The man who offered to show her the snake." But it is possible that she didn't realize what he was talking about. Well, I mean, there was laughter. Oh, jeez. I wouldn't have known when I was 17. Still, someone should check if he's on the sex offender registry, and then he should be impeached. Well, we'll leave that. I guess we'll wind up leaving that to the voters. But he was removed from his position of significant authority. And that, you know, this is uncomfortable for me because I don't want to sound like one of those moralizing fundamentalists. But I don't think you have to be a fundamentalist to simply point out that there's a time and a place for, I guess, everything, including creepy misogyny like this. No, there's no place for it. But this is the stuff you get with the, you know, towel snapping in the men's locker room and, you know, playing flinch. And they laughed. Oh, I meant to say that I have an acre to sell her in the Everglades. Okay. Swampland in Arizona? Oh, I didn't mean to tell her to show her a snake or nothing. Oh, Jesus. So it's Friday on the front porch, so let's get started with the conversation. It's about a quarter before the hour, and you're welcome to jump in. This from Marty. Gentle FBI. Leave it to fellow officials to remove someone from office. That's impeachment. Leave it to the voters. That's a recall vote. Well, no, I mean, I just figure he'll be up for re-election in a couple of years. Yeah, I don't know what the constitutional status is of impeachment or recall or anything like that in Connecticut. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Why do you think I sent you that email?
Yeah.
Because I knew that was coming. Intuitively, I knew that someone is going to say something like that.
What is it? I mean, is it just like some kind of Tourette's, Jim?
No, it's just number one, bad judgment, poor manners, lack of taste, and totally inappropriate. That's exactly what it is. I mean, you know, you're in a...
But it is all of that. It was inappropriate. It did show poor judgment. It was bad taste,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, to a 17-year-old girl that's just a young woman who's just done it... I don't know. I don't know at 17 years old if I could have talked to a group of authority figures like that.
Knowing you, you probably could have. You would have made a valued effort.
But, well, thank you, Jim. But it's difficult to do.
Well, yeah, it is intimidating for a person of that age to get up and to discuss things like fear in front of... the General Assembly, or whatever they call themselves.
I mean, we can have one of those little Freudian moments here, because she talked about the snakes, and then she went on to talk about turtles. But Representative Hewitt was he heard snake, and, well, you know, I guess Dr. Freud would opine, but we'll leave him smoking his cigar.
Oh, yeah. He had too many of those, I'm afraid, but nonetheless, you know, there are a number of fears that people have. And some of those fears are very serious. They're very hard to overcome.
And some of them have sort of an evolutionary basis. The very human fear of the dark has to do with the fact that we don't have the eyesight that other predator animals have, and we were very vulnerable until fire came along.
Yeah, I mean, remember the program we talked about, Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah.
In which they measured, I think it's the Bordell something scale or something like that. and it references Fear of the Dark. I recorded that on TiVo, and I still watch it from time to time because it's really good about history of man and his dealings with fear and stuff like that.
Well,
but, you know, going as far as fears are concerned, you have how many, Bob? How many fears are listed in the taxonomy? Let's see. Allurophobia, you know what that is?
No.
Fear of cats.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Allurophobia, absolutely.
I know acrophobia, agoraphobia.
Agoraphobia, fear of the marketplace, from the Greek word, from, you know, and it's fear of open spaces and horizons and things like that. And
claustrophobia.
And agoraphobia, because I suffer from that. And let me tell you, it can really hurt you when you are trying to do things like driving and all of a sudden this thing hits you and you're looking at a wide open horizon and you're piloting a 6,000-pound automobile and you have a panic attack because of it. It's devastating. It's nothing to laugh at.
No, I don't. Having suffered from a nasty round of panic disorder some years in the past, I take that stuff very seriously.
Yeah, panic attacks can be very serious, and they're very real. And unfortunately, a number of people who don't suffer from those just can't understand, well, what's wrong with you? And my reply to them was, I just wish you could experience 90 seconds of this, and you'd never open your mouth again.
I'm looking at a list of phobias here that is literally thousands long.
Oh, yeah. Numbers of things. I mean, you know, like I say, I don't know what the fear of snakes is. I mean, I don't care for snakes either. I feel about snakes the way Harrison Ford did in his movies. Does it have to be snakes? God almighty. I mean, you know, if I see a snake...
Why is it always snakes?
Yeah. I can remember going down New River Drive, and I saw this diamondback rattler that must have been 12 feet long. I'm not kidding you. He was 12 feet long. And he was crossing the road, and when he saw my car coming, he had the strength in his body because of the rest of him to lift up his head. And I stopped the car. I said, my God, that boy probably could pop the tire if he wanted to.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, well, look, I know of this woman who works in my agency, and I'll tell you what, buddy, I'm going to give you a break. Because I know she jogs on this road a lot. And I said, I'm not going to hit you, and you're not going to hit me. And I'm going to let you do what you're going to do. But the next time you see this woman, and I gave her, this is, I was just saying this, you know, mentally, so to speak. How about giving her a run for her money? And, you know, and that snake was not at all. I mean, most snakes, if you approach them, they're going to try to get out of your way.
With a few exceptions, yeah.
And, of course, the exceptions are, for example, being from South Carolina.
Water moccasins.
Water moccasins. I mean, those snakes are very, by nature, they're very curious. And
they will go out of their way to watch you have a fit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, they are a very aggressive snake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What is it? The Bushmaster is also very aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, poor little rattlesnake will do everything in its power to get away from
him. Absolutely. Unless you step on him, and basically he's going to have to respond to that. But I mean, most snakes are, you know, very, very shy, and they will attempt to locate to a place of safety away from you. Unless you go ahead, unless you're digging for them the way I see some of these fools on these nature programs. And I'll tell you one thing, that's something I could not do. I mean, these guys that are in Africa and Asia and places like that, and they go searching for bombas and all this kinds of stuff. Lord! Let me tell
Jim,
you.
I don't think I've ever heard you make that noise on this program before.
Well, I spent 3 months in Honduras working with Strong Roads for the Army, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they have the fur de lance of the Black Mamba.
Yeah.
Called a one-step. Because when he hits you, that's it. You got one step and it's off. You're off to glory.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know how this wound up being Snake Night Friday, but in conjunction with all of this, you know, they have an absolute plague of snakes. It's called the brown snake in Guam. And this, I haven't decided yet whether this is scientific genius or something gone awry, but. And I think the Defense Department has something to do with this because, you know, we've got a military base there, right?
Right, we do, sure.
And these brown snakes, I guess, migrated northward, but they get into electrical transformers. They can take down whole neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
They've been found in aircraft. They're nasty. They're poisonous.
Mm.
Yeah. And they get to be like 6-7 feet long. Nothing that, well... One of those would give your old buddy a run for her money, too.
Well, hush, you give me a case of the Fantod.
Well.
By the way, I got that expression. Woo Lord!
Yeah.
Guess who? Millie Jackson.
Oh, really?
You've never heard her?
Uh-uh.
Well, she did an album called Get It Out Your System. And the album was back in the 80s, late 70s or whatever. I think she's gone now. God bless her. But she could sing a song. And, on the album cover, it's just an open toilet seat, that's, you know, toilet that's been flushed, and basically it's Get It Out Your System, and she has a ballad about this boyfriend of hers that's not been, shall we say, very faithful to her, and she's talking about lighting the fire and all this kind of stuff. If you could find it, it's a hoot to listen to. I didn't mean to digress.
No. I will though. But no, you're gonna love this story out of Guam, because what they're doing, they are literally parachuting dead rats into places where they think the snakes are.
I hope those rats contain something just size rat. I hope they have poison.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I screwed up the story, I guess, Jim. They're parachuting dead poisoned rats.
I've heard this. Yeah, I've heard this.
And
I mean, these things are a real problem.
Yes, they're a scourge. So,
and they can get into the damnedest places, and like I say, they fall up in different places. And
because there have been others, you know, Hawaii had no snakes when white folks first got there, but this was one of those little. Object lessons in environmental ecological management. The ships that came to Hawaii had rats. So
right.
Hawaii got rats. So they brought in snakes to get rid of the rats, and then they had snakes. And then they brought in mongooses or mongoose, and then they've got a mongoose problem. And the thing is, it's almost a paradigm for any ecological difficulty. Pretty soon, you start with mice and you wind up with an elephant problem.
Yeah,
and it's kind of where we are with climate change. It's where we are with changing the flora and fauna footprint in any given place. I mean, consider, and most folks don't spend a lot of time thinking about them, but the nutrient problem, and then you know the story out of South Carolina last night, piranha and Asian eels.
Mm-hmm.
And with climate change, these problems get worse.
Well, there are people who are dumping these things into lakes and streams in Florida and places like that, and in other parts of the southeastern United States where the climate is warm and the water is warm, and they're beginning to multiply. And the you know, the fish and game people and the other agencies responsible for the safety of bodies of water and surrounding shores are really having a problem with some of these deadly creatures. I mean, for example, there's an epidemic of pythons
in the Everglades and yeah.
Yeah, I mean these things are just huge. I'll guarantee you one thing, let me see one of those and I will go one way, and I don't give a shit which way he goes, but it's going to be the opposite from which way he is.
And he's the one that gets to make the choice. You're happy to accede.
But the thing about it is this: those things can travel like a speedboat on land.
Yep.
Just like an alligator, people don't think the alligators are very slow or
no, when they want to get when they want to go somewhere, they can do it. They can do it quickly.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a it's just a bad thing. They've had a lot of problems with the, these people who import these exotic pets, and the owners get tired of them, and once having become tired of them, you just flush them or throw them in a pond or something like that, and pretty soon, guess what? You've got a whole colony of those things over there.
Well, the word piranha and South Carolina in the same sentence, you would think would have South Carolinians thinking about getting active about the problem. We got a what? But they buried the report for a year.
Oh, well, they buried a lot of stuff down there. I think we were talking about that last night, or you were, I think. Nikki Haley buried the report about the low country and stuff like that, didn't she?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That included reference to piranhas in South Carolina. Amazonian piranhas. It's a hell of a swim.
And that's all they need. It's down there. Because as far as I'm concerned, pursuant to the word rats, they've got enough politicians in South Carolina and in Washington, D.C., who are, in my opinion, just mice studying to be rats. And as of late, they've come to full maturity.
Well, I think that's the absolute truth, but try to explain that to Nikki Haley. They think everything's going just swimmingly. And here, you know, here we are in day one of the sequester, and you know, the apocalypse hasn't come yet.
So
I guess the Republicans think, well, we're just going to stand fast and stop that spendthrift Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist. God, what a country.
Well, yeah, it has, and these people. I was watching Al Sharpton earlier, and I just cut the sound off. I'm just, you know, after a while you go into overload about what's going to be done and how it's going to be solved, because after that, on the 27th, we've got the continuing resolution, and I'm just tired of these radical groups like Tea Party people, and you know who I'm talking about, who are trying to hold the government and the people of the United States hostage for whatever means or ends they hope to achieve. You know, I don't understand.
Well, I think you do, Jim. I think you don't understand it intellectually, but I think you do understand it politically or philosophically. Their ultimate goal is to utterly destroy any social or political gains made by the non-wealthy that have been achieved since roughly 1829.
But the trouble is, you have so many poor people and people who don't know any better who are right in lockstep behind these people. A lot of these people I hear on, you know, our favorite friends radio and stuff like that, I mean, they don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. You know it, and I know it. But yeah, one of them said the other day when I was caught part of the broadcast, well, are there any rich people left in America?
Oh, please.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, he did stop saying sequestration and got it right. He started saying sequester.
Your work there is done, Jim.
Well, I call Shane Southern.
Bless your heart.
I said, is this what you want to have on your radio, some ignoramus like this? And he said, well, what did he say to you? He said, well, I've got a linguist on the other line. I thought to myself, you know, you know, I'm older. And if I could call pizzas and taxi cabs to that fool's house, I would, but the owner don't.
He'd be getting up at 4 o'clock every morning to find out if his refrigerator was running.
Whatever, you know, but I wouldn't do that because it's going to hurt people who are in that business for a living. But I mean, you know, I'm talking about, you know, kids who used to play pranks and stuff like that and call teachers in the, you know, late and ask them if they had any Prince Albert in the can, or if the refrigerator running, or, you know, stupid stuff like that. I thought to myself, my God, how immature you can get, Jim. You're absolutely puerile. But I haven't done it, but it has crossed my mind. So in my heart, I have sinned.
I'm sure expiation is not far away.
Mm-hmm. And I just hate the fact that they've given, that they stopped doing C of V's.
Oh. God only, well, there's a blow up doll with his name on it, right?
Oh. Oh, God almighty. But knowing him, he'd bite it on the ear, it'd fly out the window. But I mean, you know, I don't mean to let this conversation degenerate, but I mean, you know, I was talking about fears and space and stuff like that. I mean, this is some serious business. It really is. Just like what we're talking about today, you were earlier about the sequester and all that stuff, and these crazy people who are elected members of House of Representatives and the Senate too. I mean, they all have a part in it.
Oh, Lindsey Graham, this is the lowest point of all the time I've served in the Congress. Oh, dear.
Well, I'm afraid that will probably be lower than whale dung, and that's...
Yeah, but the funny thing is, right now is the lowest time of any that that Lindsey's ever served in the Congress, and yet he gleefully went along with a war that was framed entirely upon lies, and that wasn't a low point for him. Getting 5,000 Americans needlessly killed, that wasn't the lowest time he ever... That's kind of like when George Bush wrote in his little crayon coloring book autobiography that the worst thing that ever happened to him in his presidency was when Kanye West said he didn't like black people. You know, playing a guitar upside down and a G chord one fret too far up the neck, while people were drowning, that wasn't the low point of his presidency. It was when Kanye West said he felt like George Bush didn't like black people.
Now, what is the story about him playing the guitar?
There's a picture of him. He was at somebody's birthday party out in Arizona while people were drowning in New Orleans during Katrina. Birthday or some such, and somebody gave him a guitar, and there's a picture of him standing there with the guitar upside down, playing a G chord, one fret too far up the neck.
Was he upside down or the guitar?
I think that's one of those astronomical arguments that's probably deviled scientists for years, Jim.
Because I think that fool's been upside down ever since the day he came into this earth. My God in heaven, what a fool. Oh, Lord have mercy. So he was just literally fiddling while Rome burned.
Yeah. Literally.
That is typical, and as I go through this,
but apparently it's systemic inside Republican circles, because you know Lindsey Graham is having the worst time he's ever had in the Congress, and that man really did sit there and ballyhoo a war that was based on nothing but unmitigated lies that they knew were lies when they were lying them, Jim.
Of course, I mean, like I've recommended that book, Hubris. And it goes through the entire structure of a whole system of lies that propel this country into a war with Saddam Hussein, who in no way was attacking us. The only thing I ever heard about Saddam Hussein, and we're just going back here for a second, I mentioned this on this program, that he was giving like $25,000 bonuses to terrorists or something like that. And that's something that came out. And I'm not sure if that were true or not. But I mean, they just conjured this whole thing up to go into Saddam's country. And boy, we have a mess over there now. We have destabilized the entire region. And yet these people who did it, Wolfowitz, Cheney, Bush, and Condoleezza Rice, I mean, they're pictured on the cover of this book. You know, I think these people really should be called to account for their actions. I mean, what is the difference between what they did and what the hierarchy of the Nazi empire with his head, as Adolf Hitler did to Europe. I mean, what's the difference?
I don't see just a heck of a lot.
I mean, we're talking about, in my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm exaggerating, you can correct me, or anybody out there can correct me if they wish. I mean, we're talking about crimes against humanity. We're talking about waging unlawful war. I mean, the same indictments that were handed down at Nuremberg, in my opinion, could apply to these people. And I'm not trying to repeat myself because I've said this before, but and I'm just saying it again just for emphasis, that's all.
Well, I think it deserves to be re-mentioned. If we took seriously the general holdings of law, not the specifics of who was charged at Nuremberg, or for that matter in Tokyo, but more particularly Nuremberg, if we took seriously the pronouncements of that tribunal, then George Bush, Dick Cheney, and his fellow travelers would long ago have been in the dock in The Hague. Would they not?
Oh, I think so. And if we had some people like Maxwell Fife and Chief Justice Robert Jackson, who were some of the men who presided over the Nuremberg War Trial, they would, if they were alive today and able to sit at the bench and prosecute, I think they would find amazing similarities.
Marty points out, I guess, points out a little bit of the obvious. He said the difference: Germany lost. Every day, Bush Co. is not held to account. The relevance of Nuremberg and the words of Justice Jackson shrink tenfold. And it's the truth. It's the truth.
I'm afraid that justice is meted out by the victors. And if we had, let's just face it, if we had lost that war the way the Third Reich did and the way the Imperial Japan did, well, we might find ourselves in an entirely different position. But it would appear to me as though it's coming back on us, the repercussions as
well. Well, there are so many things that are, we as a nation and as a people, Jim, do not understand that the snowball has already left the mountaintop and will be monumental by the time it rolls into us. I have a fear that's been growing inside me, and I don't know if I'll live to see it or not. I don't want to see it at all. But the fact of the matter is, I suspect that somewhere in the history of the in the future history of the United States, if we do not get very, very serious about our role in how and in what is happening to the planet right now, that there will come a time when the rest of the world will call us to account, and it will not be pleasant, Jim. It will not be pleasant.
Your point is well made, and I believe you are correct. I know you are, because, you know, vice, like virtue, has its own reward. That's for sure.
Indeed. Indeed.
And, of course, I mean, look at some of the stuff that that's been going on in this country ever since it was established. I mean, there's a lot of karma there, Bob.
Well, that's why I say I've gotten very, very sensitive about hearing the word democracy, as in our democracy. There is not now, and I'll just repeat myself because I think it bears repeating, there is not now, nor has there ever been a time in the history of the United States of America when we have had actual democracy. Never.
I don't really think it exists.
And as such, and the idea of democracy in this country remains aspirational only.
Well, that's what I mean. It's definitely an aspiration, something that one can hope will happen or look forward to. But unfortunately, as far as its realization is concerned, it just ain't there.
No.
And I don't think it's going to be there ever.
But it's kind of obscene the way that we trot that word around. We've used it improperly so many times that we've literally drawn the actual validity, the value and the meaning of the word. We've reduced it to a nullity.
Well, you know, it's just amazing, you know, how words can be used. I mean, manifest destiny, that's one.
Well, American exceptionalism is a classic. That gets brooded about by the right wing, and as Dr. Bill has pointed out, they don't have the first itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy, tiny little idea what the phrase actually means. One of these days, I need to just cue it up and play Dr. Bill's remarks on American exceptionalism on this program, because lots and lots of people need to hear that.
Well, Dr. Bill's a very wise man, and I've talked to him. And
well, I think you will enjoy it.
He's very well grounded in his background and the applications.
Well, the plan now is to bring Dr. Bill back to the air beginning this coming Monday.
Well, I wish you the very best in that.
So we'll be doing some tech work over the weekend.
Great deal to offer, and good luck with all your interweb tubes. I'll tell you, speaking of demons, I believe demons can get into certain devices like computers. That's for damn sure, because all of a sudden I tried to pull up my Internet Explorer and it's a white page. So I'm going to have to deal with that. So I had to type into the upper toolbar your address to get you tonight.
Yep. I don't necessarily think. Well, if those are demons, they are very, very physical and real demons, because the filth that's put out there to corrupt computers and take them over, and you know, this isn't paranoia; it's real.
Well, I know it, and you know, and these things, not to drag out this conversation, they are coming from like China, Russia, and other places like that. And I received a phone call the other day from some guy telling me that my computer needed to be fixed, and I could barely understand the fool. And I said, what seems to be the problem? And he said, your computer is sending error messages to our server. And I said, uh-huh. I said, I want you to do something with your computer, okay? Because he said he was going to try to do something with my computer. And I said, I want you to take it and shove it up your ass.
Good for you, Jim.
And I called the FBI.
Good.
And luckily, that fool had given me their number, and he is located in Hanford, Washington. That's where the node is for the, you know, for their telecom. But it goes all over the planet. And I understand that there's a lot of these problems that are coming out of China. The Chinese military has a whole complex devoted to.
Apparently, based on the news report from last week, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I've taken enough of your time. It's Friday on the front porch, so let somebody else get on here, and I'll stop babbling about my fears and snakes. And and remember, you got to watch out for those pant snakes. Those are the deadliest ones of all.
Apparently so.
And that's what a young lady who's a good friend of mine told me, but it wasn't said by a girl of 17. I can tell you that.
Exactly. Jim, have yourself a good weekend.
Well, I'll try. You too. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers.
Our buddy Jim, and we will continue. It's about, goodness me, 17 minutes past the hour. Lines are open. Friday on the front porch. 304-658-3333, and on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Either way works fine. And let's do keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the conversation.
Hey, Bob, this is Kevin out here in beautiful, sunny Colorado Springs.
Well, how's it going, Kevin? Is it sunny?
Yep, we had our little snowfall the other night, which was nothing. We got an inch of snow in an hour, and then after that it was nothing. So, you know, we're pretty much still in a drought situation out here, except for the mountains. They've gotten more than their share of snow. People on the plains have got a lot of snow, but it's been, they said that it wasn't enough to relieve the drought. So, you know, But there's no such thing as global warming because it's all snow, and, you know, that can't be part of global warming.
No.
No, they don't seem to realize that little fact that, you know, global warming means somebody's going to be colder than normal. You've got a 25,000-mile radius Earth and two hemispheres, so, you know, while it's warm in Australia, record highs there, we could have record lows here or record highs either one.
Or that thing that I keep trying to point out, I'm sure there's a much more precise meteorological term for this, but what I call the shifting of the seasons.
Yep.
Where winter doesn't behave like winter's supposed to, starts late, starts soon, ends soon, all the seasons do it. And I've seen it for years now.
Yeah.
And now at the tender age of 50, I guess that, you know, maybe I don't know, I got my AARP invitation the other day, so, you know, what, maybe I'm a wise old man now. But I have seen summer not behave like summer. I've seen winter not behave like winter, or start late, or start too soon.
Yep.
And those things, those moments of meteorological unpredictability, if that's even the right term, presage that something funny is going on.
Sure, anybody that doesn't want to recognize that fact, whatever the cause, you can at least recognize the fact that something's different, because that's something we've had for the last couple of years. That's where the winter has arrived late, and last year wasn't much of a winter at all. This year's, we've had some cold weather and a little bit of snow, but it's nothing like what we would call normal. To people out here that have been here for, you know, 50 years or so, they say back in the 80s, heavy snowfalls were common out here in Colorado Springs, and now we don't, you know, it's very rare that we get them. So, you know, just how that, what you were talking about earlier with this guy in, what state was he in?
Connecticut.
And the right wing, I mean, granted, he was supposedly a Democrat, but the thing I get really upset about is that they want people to pray the Lord's Prayer.
Oh, that's Indiana.
Yeah. Well, it was also in Texas. There was a bill in Texas I saw on the Twitters that they wanted to have people start the day by reciting the Lord's Prayer, and I think it was the Ten Commandments, something like that. And they want people to do as they don't do. They want to impose their religious beliefs on us. But if I were to say to them, well, okay, but to be fair, we got to let the Muslims or the Jews have their
right.
Morning prayer.
Exactly. Let's go to Indiana or Texas and start passing out rugs and put a little stripe on the ground that points toward Mecca. And I mean no disrespect in saying this. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mondays we'll pray to Allah. Tuesdays we will play. We will pray to the God whose name must not be pronounced. Wednesdays we will pray to Jehovah. Thursdays we will pray to the Blessed Lady. Fridays we ain't gonna pray to nobody.
Yep.
Because, you know, somewhere along the way, the atheist got to get a little relief.
Yep. But they don't want to do that. It's their highway,
right,
or no way. And that's what really upsets me, is they say they believe in the Constitution, but it plainly says freedom from religion. That people should be allowed to practice their religion or practice no religion, but it shouldn't be forced on anybody. And they want to force it on you. And it's that way with so many things. Gun control. The Constitution says a real regulated militia. Well, they don't want no regulations. I heard some senator, it was you, I think, talking about it, where some guy wanted everyone to carry guns into schools or hospitals or bars.
Well, Idaho, the one goofball in Idaho is talking about compulsory gun ownership for every citizen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I didn't just think it's brilliant to let everybody carry guns into bars. That one really is one that takes a stroke of brilliance to say that, yeah, I want people to carry guns in bars. So, you know, but it's not even the hypocrisy, it's the control that they want to force on others. And I think that's what I've come to the realization of here in a more striking way lately. I've always, I guess, known that to a degree, but religion wants to control, just like Robertson talking about the demons. Well, if demons are in everything, then we must pray to get rid of those demons, and it's fear. You know, can you imagine someone living, and I've seen it, but could you imagine someone living in that kind of fear that I've got to pray to cast the demons out of the clothes I got from the Goodwill? You know, that's sad. It's sad that someone has got to live in that fear. And those people that live in that kind of fear are the ones that can be controlled by these religious maniacs that we're getting, who complain about the Muslims and the things they do in countries with Sharia law. But we're no different. It's just another religion. And if these people that want us to pray to God every morning, recite the Ten Commandments, pray to Mary, whatever it is.
Well, where's the time for getting a little teaching in?
Right. Well, what happens if I refuse to do that? If I'm a student and I say, no, I'm not going to pray.
Well, you'll be castigated.
Right.
But of course, in their worldview, well, that child is free to leave the room. Oh, okay. And then just get the snot kicked out of him later, right?
Well, yeah, but also, if you think about it, when rules like that start to get established, they eventually become more and more required till we end up like the girl in, started with an M. I couldn't even pronounce the name of the country. You were reading that the other day where she was going to get 30 lashes. It was either you or Malloy.
I think that was Mike.
Started with an M, the name of the country, and I couldn't pronounce it. 15 years old was raped, and the head of the secular government said, well, you know, we don't agree with that, but there's nothing we can do about it because the country's controlled by religious extremists. And I hear Americans cast, you know, the same religious Americans that want to impose me saying the Ten Commandments in school are the ones that are castigating them for allowing a 15-year-old girl to be raped. But if they had their way here in America, it would end up no different. If you could imagine America where we were required to do these things and what happens when someone doesn't, or what happens when a 15-year-old gets pregnant out of wedlock, you know, in an America that's ruled by the religious, it eventually becomes just as extreme as anywhere else in the world, because religious extremism is not relegated just to the Muslims or the Jews or the Catholics. It can be anybody and anything, and that's what I read that story about the 15-year-old girl, and I was just amazed that people could be so unfeeling as to allow a 15-year-old girl to get 100 lashes because they say she committed adultery by being raped. And, you know, that's taken...
Yeah, Jack in Shreveport pointing out, the Maldives. It's in the Maldives.
Maldives, thank you.
Jack in Shreveport, Marty pointed out the Maldives. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, he said, I read it was actually 100 lashes. And oddly enough, this dovetails a little bit because it's the Maldives that are sinking beneath the wave, Kevin. Their prime minister was raising a stink about climate change and was deposed in a coup.
Yep.
And has now, and that government has now, his government has now been replaced by a bunch of religious extremists who, while the country is literally drowning,
yep,
are focused on beating 15-year-old girls for having the unmitigated temerity to get raped.
Yep. And probably somewhere in that coup we were involved with it, I would bet you.
I don't know that. I don't necessarily know that, but you know,
I heard something about that.
By the way, based on your remarks, Kevin, Robert just wrote in from Australia. He said Australia's just finished from the news there. Australia's just finished sweltering summer has melted the record books. The Bureau of Meteorology has confirmed it was the hottest season ever since records have been kept. Records were broken for the average temperature and average daytime temperature between December and February. A new record was also set for the number of consecutive days where the average maximum was more than 39 degrees Celsius, the 7 days from January 2 to 8, almost doubling the previous record of 4 days.
Yep.
If you're 27 years old, you've never experienced an average month's temperature. It's all been above average, climate change program manager Tony Moore said in a statement.
Yep.
But it's, meanwhile, Australia recorded just near average rainfall and only slightly above average mean temperatures.
Yep.
So.
But don't forget the fires that were going on out there, too.
Oh, sure. Sure.
You know. And those fires were a direct result of those more than average high temperatures. There were days that they, you know, they were really probably 110, 115 degrees. And we had the same type of fires out here last summer. And it was the same kind of heat. About 100 degrees, winds. And
oh, so, I'm looking, you know, usually by this time of year here in the hills, Kevin, I've my thoughts begin turning to things like, I wish I had a tiller, I'd like to put in a garden. This is the time when you start your tomato seeds. This is the you know, and you start thinking about getting your potatoes in, you know, because you can get your winter stuff, or your late winter, early spring stuff. Just blew my mind. But you know, let's not pay any attention to that.
Nope.
By all means, let's continue to fritter away not just the life of our country, but the life of our planet. The human life of our planet. The planet itself is going to keep on doing what it's been doing for the last few billion years. And, you know, turning on its axis and orbiting the sun.
Yep.
But will humans be here to see that? That is the part that has been brought into serious question. And I don't like the question.
No.
And I don't like the fact. And you know, it's one thing to have a question that is difficult to answer. You've still got a fighting chance there.
Yeah.
But if you've got a question that a significant portion of the population of your country will not acknowledge is even a legitimate question, if you've got a significant portion of your country that is more likely to believe in sweater vests with demons in them than they are to believe in the reality of climate change, then your country has an existential crisis on its hands.
Yeah.
I mean, or so it really seems to me.
When you say that, the ridiculousness of it just strikes me. You have people that believe there's demons in sweaters, but they don't believe in global climate warming, change, whatever the word. They don't believe in it. It's not happening.
Right.
But we will believe that.
But they do believe in a possessed garter belt.
Yep. Pretty sad. But I just wanted to comment on it, on the religious thing, because it just strikes me so
It should be terrifying.
It is. It is. And what about, I don't have children, but what about people with children, your kids, that are just coming up to adulthood, and they've got 40, 50 more years on this planet, and what's it going to be like for them in 20 years, 30 years down the road? And I don't, I'm 53.
Well, see, what the problem is, Kevin, is what I was talking about with Jim.
Yep.
We're not, if the United States existed in some sort of a bubble and our stupidity was only going to affect us, it would be one thing. But we are running the risk of dragging the whole planet down with us.
Yep.
And as a consequence of that, I fear that somewhere in the future history of this planet, or of this country, there is going to be an accounting, a reckoning, in which we are not going to want to participate. Because when the whole world says we've got a problem and we're the ones saying, no, we're just going to keep doing things the way we want to, then at some point in time, the world is going to stop us.
Sure. Well.
And at that point in time, I fear, God knows what kind of government will be in place. And I fear that we will reduce this planet to a cinder. And just turn it over to evolution and see what the 6 foot tall sentient cockroaches come up with on the next loop through.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the fact that we have weapons that can destroy the Earth, and more than one country is now in possession of them, you really only can come to that conclusion that someday, may not be in my lifetime or your kid's lifetime or their kid's lifetime, but you just got to think to yourself, unless we make an effort to try and get rid of those things throughout the world.
Yeah, if my attitude gets much grimmer, I'm just going to put on a double feature after the show tonight and watch Children of Men and Blade Runner and have done with it.
Well, I'm a little bit worried about this sequester thing, but I don't buy into the...
Well, there's plenty to be worried about, Kevin, but the fact of the matter is, at this point in time, the Republican Party is cheering over the fact that it has lit a match under the United States of America if we're going to continue the metaphor, as dry as tinder.
Yeah.
And they want to see what happens when it burns. The Republican Party is standing looking at the United States of America saying, burn, baby, burn.
And the problem is that it's going to burn right under them, and they're going to get caught up in it. And I really think they're playing with fire. We're going to be caught up in it too, but people aren't going to...
I don't necessarily think that they're going to get caught by it, Kevin, because here's how it plays out. If a storm slams into a vulnerable part of this country and kills 2,000 or 3,000 people, you know, Anderson Cooper will parachute in for a few days and ask us to excuse the Calliope music in the background. I remember when that happened. If an earthquake or a volcano or something like that happens, there will be wall-to-wall media coverage. But if Granny in Topeka quietly expires and isn't found for a few days, that might make the Topeka news. It won't even register a blip on the radar in the rest of the country. And if Grandpa in Florida expires similarly, the same will obtain. Frankly, you could have 5,000 grannies and grandmas starve, and the for-profit media would not be bothered to notice. And they damn sure wouldn't be drawing bright lines, because the for-profit media have been complicit in explaining to America that a few grannies need to starve so that we can get our fiscal economic house in order. It's there for anybody who cares to watch it every day, whether it's Morning Joe or Hannity or, you know, the evening news, or God knows David Gregory on Sunday or George Snuffleupagus, any of those multi-million dollar for-profit media freaks who have absolutely no skin in the game but want to make sure that Granny does. Oh, it's...
Well, that is a very real possibility of happening, but there are those of us that aren't poor or aren't that old, that are poor, yet. I think you're going to find those people, you know, when you take people, kids out of the Head Start programs, you cut a third of the unemployment benefits, and you cut the length of them, all those things are going to catch up with them. And I don't think it's going to be pretty, and I don't think it's going to be peaceful. That's just cold hard facts. I think it will backfire on the Republicans. Not today. 6 months down the road, probably.
Well, before it ever backfires, Kevin, something awful will have to precipitate it. And it grieves me to think about someone's loved one paying that price in order to wake up a nation to the fact that there are barbarians inside our government who are running around stealing the silverware and torching the halls of power. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, and that's the other thing, is it grieves you, but it doesn't grieve the 1%. They could care less.
Hey, listen, as long as the lobsters keep getting delivered on time, everything is fine by the 1%.
Exactly. And, you know, they had a thing on MSNBC a while ago about Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and how they had planned for this sequester and how they were going to be chumming up to the Democrats when the sequester came if they had been elected. And I'm thinking to myself, you want to talk about something that would be a ticking time bomb is a Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney presidency, because that's all they wanted to do was cut. You can blame President Obama for a lot of things, but he didn't have that kind of evil in his heart of what Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney wanted to do to the economy. And,
well, I think some of that question is open, just based on this claim that is out there that President Obama wanted. Acceded to the sequester notion in order to drag Democrats kicking and screaming into the idea of entitlement reform and a grand bargain. I mean, that allegation is out there.
Who made that? Was that Woodward?
It's from an exchange with Gene Sperling of the White House.
Yeah,
and Woodward's made a complete ass of himself over it.
Yeah,
and so. It's back and forth, but it's a creepy concept, and I saw this brooded over at Fire Dog Lake, and of course everything I read there I take with a grain of salt, because that place should just be renamed the I Hate Barack Obama Fan Club. And I don't say that because I'm an Obama cheerleader. I'm not. I'm looking at a story here about the Keystone XL pipeline that has me fit to scream. And
what's that about?
It's late on Friday, so naturally that's when you release the ugly stuff.
Yep.
So the State Department, with the Secretary of State half a planet away, and the government itself locked down in miserable paranoia over the sequester.
Yep.
Released their supplemental environmental impact statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the report says, approval or denial of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline project is unlikely to have a substantial impact on the rate of development in the oil sands or on the amount of heavy crude oil refined in the Gulf Coast area. You can take that one of two ways. One way is to say that they're completely denying the reality of what this thing is. You know, Bill McKibben calls it a carbon bomb.
Yep.
And the other is to say that, okay, if it's not going to have any impact, then why do it?
Yeah, exactly. When you read it, though, I was thinking, that's a lot of wordsmithing there.
Yeah.
In the way they said it. And the fact that they released it probably at 4 o'clock Eastern Standard. So nobody would be reading that.
Well, the report I'm looking at on it hit the web at 4.03 p.m. So, yeah, they released it probably about 3.30 or 3 or Friday afternoon after the first couple of martinis had been served to the for-profit media.
Yeah. That's one of the things about government that irritates me, too, is that they try to hide stuff like this instead of just coming out and saying it. Now, if Obama approves Keystone, I'm not going to be happy. But I don't...
I know.
I don't want to say he's going to or not, and I know that I'm...
Well, I sure felt like he was telegraphing it with that remark in the State of the Union about, we need modern pipelines.
Yeah.
The hell did that mean if it wasn't Keystone XL?
Well, I know that there are a lot of us doing pushback on it, and I'm hoping that says something to the president, because anybody that's in the way of that Keystone XL pipeline has got to be worried, particularly in that aquifer.
That aquifer serves, probably to some degree or another, serves you, Kevin.
I know it. Yeah.
And it also serves people in North Dakota and serves people in Missouri and serves people in freaking Utah, probably.
Yeah, I'd venture to say it serves at least probably a third of the country. And, you know, so nobody is going to be not affected by this pipeline in some way, shape, or form, because whether it's coming over your neck of the woods or a possible threat to your aquifer, you know, that's the problem.
Well, our aquifers are already largely poisoned anyway, so, you know, we hillbillies, we don't count in the first place.
Well, when you got a senator like Joe Manchin...
Don't get me started. It's too early.
Yeah.
No, I promise, I'm not drinking on the air. Don't get me started on Joe.
Yeah, I know. You know, I still have a little bit of positive outlook, and I don't necessarily want to throw...
Oh, I do, too. I'm positive we're effed.
Sure. But I'm also a little bit encouraged by the amount of participation that some of us are doing each day, not only on your project, which is our project as well, but, you know, I'm seeing some participation by a lot of different groups on a lot of different range of issues, and that does encourage me, but it's getting through to the knuckle draggers that, you know, we're trying to save you as well as ourselves, as well as the world, and that's the hindrance that...
I don't need any saving. I got me a gun.
Yep, and man, you know, okay, you take your gun, and if that can prevent the destroying of your aquifer by a pipeline that burst of this type of tar sands, go ahead and use it, but not going to do much. You know, 38 shells have a very nasty way of hurting a human if they hit them, but they don't do much in tar sands.
No.
So, but anyway, I'll go ahead and let someone else get on here. I just wanted to call and talk about that because it's just so striking to me that, you know, I really still have some spirituality left. It may not seem like it, but I am tired of the fundamentalist right trying to tell me how to live and do things, and really tired of Pat Robertson telling people that their clothes are infected by demons.
Well, all I can tell you is be careful of any secondhand socks.
Yeah, I know.
Because they can make you walk places you don't want to go if there's a demon in them.
They might be fun, though. Never know.
Well, sinful socks.
Yeah, exactly.
Might walk. So, you never know, Kevin. They might walk you right into a strip joint. No telling. Kevin, have a good weekend, my friend.
Hey, one more quick question on Dr. Bill. What time is he going to be on?
The plan is for him to be on at 4 Eastern, which I guess would be 2 Mountain.
My time, yeah. 4 Eastern, 3 Central, 2 Mountain, and 1 Pacific.
Bingo.
And for 3 hours, then I took.
Two.
Okay.
Yeah. Dr. Bill, then me, then Raymond.
Yep. Well, that's good. That's good. And I'm looking forward to it. And if you decide you want to play that clip that you were talking about earlier, I am more than ready to listen to it.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Kevin. Take care.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye now. Calling from Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin. And onward we go on this Friday on the front porch. Sandra is with us. Are you there, Sandra?
Yeah. Hey, Bob. How's it going?
I'm hanging in, I guess. Playing with the internet demons.
Oh, right. Yeah. You never know what's going on with that, huh?
No, you just don't. I don't have that Ghostbuster stuff.
Quick question. I'm just being a bit nosy, but have you heard from David from Maine?
Not in quite some time, no.
Oh, I just wonder.
I've been wondering about David too.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I just popped in my mind because I just it's been a while since he's popped in with a call or two.
Well, it has been, and that's the way we are here in the commune. We worry about folks when we don't hear from them.
Yeah. Well, anyway, hope he's all as well.
Me too.
So we're supposed to this pipeline now because, they're going to dig it up anyway? They're trying to run that argument? Wow, that's so... It's not true.
No, it's not.
If they don't get this pipe, no one else is going to offer them a way to some coast and refinery. I got the impression that all the other options are like, no, within their own damn country.
That's my understanding, too. And yet this supplemental environmental impact statement makes reference, and I confess, Sandra, I haven't had time to read it thoroughly, but it makes reference to the fact that there is enough rail and trucking infrastructure. So I guess now they're talking about putting it on trucks and railroad cars?
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
It seems like from what I've read, not from, the usual environmental sites, but from some articles from the actual oil industry, they're saying that they need the capacity to expand the tar sands in general. They need to have a way to move it, or it's not going to be viable as an investment. I mean, that's from them.
Right, because it's monumentally expensive to do. That's one of the stupid things about it.
No, but for the State Department, it's so cynical and so, disingenuous, and it's also... a problem because it's being dumped on us, late Friday, and it doesn't bode well to me for the pending decision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, well.
And see, I guess I'm a little bit of a cynic now, Sandra, because I've been through public comment periods. But the thing is, now a 45-day public comment period will open up, and you hope that people will comment and say, hell no.
Yeah.
But, of course, there will be a bunch of hell yeses coming from people like the Teamsters and, folks who want the jobs. And we come back to that calculus that I've been talking about for a year at least now between, which one of his constituencies will President Obama most willingly screw?
Well, he wasn't golfing with Bill McKibben. I'm sorry, I hate to keep going there. But
no, but it's true.
I mean, and not only that, we're talking about, the NAFTA countries now. We're talking Canada and the U.S. This is being framed globally. People have to keep that in mind from here on out. We're not, as sovereign as we would like to think when it comes to these, sort of big, global transnational entities wedded to various governments. I mean, the constituency that Obama seems to be focused on is, the sort of global elite. I don't know how else, and I'm not saying it in some sort of, world order type thing. No, I'm just talking about the interest is huge. There's a lot at stake here, and there's a lot of money that's going to be left on the table if he says no. I'm sorry to say that, but I have to.
Well, that's why I asked the question the way that I did, Sandra. On the one hand, the so-called big greens, I don't know how much money they pumped into the Obama campaign. But I know that labor just about broke itself financially supporting him and didn't even get a mention in the inaugural address. So with that,
yeah,
with that in mind, I'm guessing it's easier to screw the big greens.
Yeah, not only that, but you saw that the AFL-CIO, they didn't come out saying, oh, we must have it, but they didn't, you know, their discussion about it isn't that strong.
Well, they didn't have to say it. They didn't have to say that because they pumped money into lobbying for it in 2012 to the tune of, you know, $250,000 or so. So did the carpenters and millwrights. So did the pipe fitters. I think the Teamsters did too. You know, remember this is 2013, Sandra, and I'm not trying to be patronizing, but money is speech.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, I don't know. I just thought, well, that, you know, none of that looks good because of who we're dealing with. I mean, Fire Dog Lake aside, Obama had this press conference where this is what he said. Democrats aren't doing anything either to compromise. There are members of my party who violently disagree that anything should be done on Medicare. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but the dude seems more focused on fucking over the entitlements than I can't. It's like a dog with a bone with this shit here. So I don't know. I'm not. I find it really disturbing that he keeps coming back to this grand bargain. I mean, they're obsessed.
Well, and all I can do every time I read that is think about that story that Alan Grayson told, and that's two years ago. You know, about that was his big dream, entitlement reform.
No, and also it speaks to this whole idea of people always talking about, oh, well, there's different forces arrayed against Obama, blah, blah, blah. And to me, he seems to be one of the most effective presidents I've seen insofar as what he wants. He's gotten it all. And he's still able to kill people. So I'm confused on where he is challenged. Who's challenging him and where? Maybe you can tell me.
No. It seems to me that for the most part, with the exception of that so-called grand bargain, he has gotten a lot of what he wanted. Now, granted, the things were submitted by the White House. He wanted a jobs bill. The Congress naturally would, and I say naturally because the House of Representatives is an asylum at this point, wouldn't comply. There's an argument to be made that he did want to do more stimulus spending. Again, the House of Representatives would not comply.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't get that, but I think you're largely right.
Well, no, I understand that, but why is it that every opportunity that it comes up always comes back to deficit reduction as opposed to stimulus or job creation? You see what I mean? When he's not getting what he wants, it's not because he wants to stimulate the economy, it's because he wants this damn entitlement reform. Now, you see what I'm saying? And that's why it just seems to be almost pathological and just weird.
Right, and all you have to do is go and read Krugman or Dean Baker or a few of those others, and they're saying, well, in large part, exactly what's being discussed here, that the deficit side of the thing is not of nearly as critical of importance as the spending side is, and that we've got to have spending, but the Republicans have made spending into a dirty word.
Yeah, and I'll also add, which is, I know it's like I probably get some pushback for this, but you know, I'm getting sick of the shiny object being whatever gay issue is for the moment. What is it now? We're going to try to overturn DOMA? I mean, that's all good and well, but it's becoming really the shiny object. There it is. Look over here. And meanwhile, I'm going,
well, if you're going to get some pushback, I'll get it too, because I had the same thought. What is the value of being able to get married in a wasteland?
Well, and it's just not only that, but, you know, we got these trade agreements that are on the horizon that he's desperate to push through. You know, we have the climate disruption that's sort of ongoing. You know, we have the endless destruction of privacy on the internet that keeps coming back like a jack-in-the-box. You know, it's back again. Now he wants to write more rules to make whistleblowers even more put upon. Like,
well, see,
it
was telling to me, Sandra, that all of a sudden, with the sequester looming, John Boehner decided it would be okay to let the House vote on the Senate's version of the Violence Against Women Act. And before, and, you know, I don't want any hate mail over that. I support it wholeheartedly. I support marriage equity wholeheartedly. But it tells me something when John Boehner says, well, you know, we'll let that come to a vote. And lo and behold, the Violence Against Women Act was passed by all the Democrats and a wee tiny handful of Republicans, and it was certainly not passed with the approval of Eric Cantor or Louie Gohmert or Michelle Bachmann or any of those other various and sundry weirdos. But it suggested to me that Boehner is playing a very calculated game, isn't he? Are you there?
Yeah, you know.
He'll let those social issues bubble out, but at the same time he is damn sure going to strike the match under the tinder.
Well, I just, you know, I'm just sort of you know, because I look at, I'm also, and this is a bit cynical, but I see the people who fund some of this, which is good. Don't get me wrong, this movement on the gay issue, like Singer, who's this, you know, hedge fund vulture capitalist, you know, he's funded that, you know, a lot of money coming in from the, you know, rich gays, and marriage is top on their agenda, and that's what's getting done. You know, you can still get your ass fired in a lot of states here if you're queer. I don't see no movement on those sort of things. You know, other things that gay people might need and want, not much discussion on when it's in the economic realm. So, you know, anyway, I know I'm just sort of bitching. I have to also mention the, you know, neo-Confederate Supreme Court. I mean, these people are just straight up scandalous with the sovereign state, independent sovereign, you know, old Confederacy chit-chat from Kennedy. I'm like, oh my God. That statement was worse than the racial entitlement one to me, because I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Are we back in 1852?
And it's hard not to say that we are. It kind of blew me away that, and I've got the story here. I guess Rachel Maddow covered it. This story coming out of Alaska that they and you know, Montana's done one, Texas has done one. God, you know. These neo-Confederate states, where, you know, federal agents ain't allowed to enforce gun laws in this here state. Right? And that's just, you know, never mind 1852, this is straight up 1829. This is nullification in all of its ignorant glory. And it's gotten to the point that, lawmaker in Alaska, a Democrat, of course, said that this is secessionism. And, of course, I said that a year ago.
Well, I mean, no, but this Supreme Court is so disturbing because, I mean, during the sort of Warren courts and some of the other courts that, you know, you may value a bit more, their decisions are always, you know, unanimous or 8-1 or 7-2. But now all we get are 5-4 and not a peep from the polity about this. And to me, I'm like, you know what? People are not paying attention, and this country is just a circle in the drain, because we cannot have the third branch delivering decisions like this 5-4. I mean, this is just, it's an outrage. It's unbelievable. And The Congress could change that shit by putting three more justices on there. None of this shit is etched in stone. Oh, but no, we're too stupid out here. We don't know nothing about our government. And look at the mess we're in. My God.
And what way out, Sandra?
I don't know, but I'm just sort of...
I mean, I don't mean to just belabor points, but I mentioned it earlier. I talked about it last night. When I think of the fact that there's no air traffic controller on duty from midnight to sunrise at Yeager Airport in Charleston, West Virginia, one, that's Charleston, West Virginia. Two, Charleston, West Virginia is not the only airport that got that treatment from the FAA. I mean, does that give you the creepies thinking about that?
And it just is, and it's just going to get progressively worse as the months go on with, you know, no inaction on this. And I mean, you know, why is it okay for the Senate to have this super majority to do anything, but the Supreme Court can just have this 5-4 shit never even discussed? I mean, don't you find all that completely ass backwards?
Well, it's ludicrous. It is in any other circumstance, it would be a matter of farce.
Well, anyway, the only reason why I mentioned the Supreme Court, because they seem to be okay, you know, telling the Congress that, well, no, because you overwhelmingly supported this Civil Rights Act, something must be wrong? Are you fucking kidding me?
That whole thing is so troubling because you have to, and I don't mean you, but generally speaking, one has to understand that if a statute is unconstitutional, it is, in jurisprudential terms, and somebody who's better at this than I am can correct me if I'm wrong, in jurisprudential terms, it's a nullity. And to be a nullity means it is as if it never was. In other words, to hold that Section 5 is unconstitutional in 2013 is to say that it was unconstitutional in 1965.
But all those decades that between then and now, what? You know what I mean? It's absurd.
And to have Scalia, as I noted, to have Scalia saying, well, you know, this thing may never go away unless the court steps in. Who gave him his cape and tights?
Well, no, that's what I mean. And then we have to look at the specter of a 5-4 decision, too. Not even the majority of that body, no. Just these fascists. And, you know, excuse me, but I didn't know that the vote was some sort of government handout to blacks. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Well, yeah, because if it was, there wouldn't be a lot of dead, bleeding people in the last generation's history.
No, but from his statement, the 13th, the 14th, the 15th, and the 19th, just for good measure, amendments are all racial entitlements, right? I mean, he's sick, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if he takes his thing to the full extension, he's completely in, you know, I don't know, 1820. I don't know where the fuck that man is. But
that's what I mean when I'm talking about a nullity. It never happened. It never was. It is, I don't know, it's as close to an abortion as the law can get.
It just didn't exist. Well, I just think he's a disgusting individual, and entitlement is something he should keep out of his mouth. He's an idiot.
Oh, yeah, it is, because, of course, he's a, you know, anybody want to talk about entitled, well, let's talk about Fat Tony Scalia. And I saw it pointed out that John Roberts has been after... has been after the Voting Rights Act since he went into the, you know, he made his bones at the Reagan Department of Justice.
Right.
And he did it on the back of the Voting Rights Act. He has been after that. I mean, my God, we're talking about 1980, what, five? He's been after that for 25 years.
No, but I think that this is, this will be an outrage. And mark my words, the 5-4 stuff is wearing well thin, you know, as far as a legitimate body. And if they think that when they throw that out, that these back-ass places aren't going to, I don't want to say, you know, maybe it's hyperbolic to go, they're going to go back to what it was like before 1965, but they're going to go back to before it, what it was like before 1965. I mean, they could, because there's going to be no protections.
Right. Well, and you know, because the whole purpose, we kind of throw Section 5 out there with the assumption that everybody knows what Section 5 is about. Section 5 is what creates a special class of states or governments who have to submit any changes to their election laws to the Department of Justice for approval before they are allowed to carry them out. And they are the states, for the most part, that have a history of Jim Crow.
And also, maybe you should throw out there that civil liberties, unlike, civil rights, unlike civil liberties, are to protect your ass from other fucking people.
Yes.
You know? Which is constantly kind of not really understood, you know? I'm talking about no free speech. I'm talking about some motherfucker who wants to kill my ass because they don't like how I look.
Yep.
And I need protection. Where the hell that's going to come from?
Well, it won't be long. That's the whole thing that just scares the life out of me about all of this, Sandra, is that if you can do the Voting Rights Act, well, hell,
what's next?
You can do the Civil Rights Act.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Because some of these assholes have made statements about the fact that they feel like Brown versus Board of Education was wrongly decided. We've got a member of the Senate who said that had he been in the Senate at that time, he would have voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Rand effing Paul.
Oh, exactly. But, I mean, we already got that decision being circumvented by the likes of Michelle Rhee and the other sort of education reformers. That's all about, you know, throwing all the brown kids to unaccountable schools. So they're going to have their board versus Brown one way or the other. Sorry,
there's a whole family of decisional law that this case calls into question. When we've talked, you and I, in the past about, for instance, Roe v. Wade, we understand that it's not Roe v. Wade that they're technically after, that they're really after, that what they're really after is Griswold versus Connecticut.
Hmm.
You have to start dismantling things a brick at a time. And I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I wish I had the communicative power to explain, to sit and list every case that is threatened by this kind of reasoning. I mean, everything that represents some degree of enlightenment. I mean, maybe I overworked the analogy, but you know, I said, and I've said it to you, I've said it repeatedly, you know, that the overturning of the Medicaid half of the mandate represented the creation of a healthcare Plessy state,
and this is
going to run all the way back to Plessy versus Ferguson.
Well, look at how that decision is manifesting itself, too, where Arkansas is agreeing to the expansion, but only if they can make people on Medicare buy private insurance. I mean, it is so disturbing that the feds gave them the okay. Oh, yeah, you can administer
Florida.
It any way you want.
Florida.
I mean, please.
You know, Rick Scott agreed to sign on to the Medicaid expansion as long as Florida was allowed to privatize their Medicaid.
Right, and it's the same thing, you know, with Arkansas I was reading about today, and it's all kind of like, I don't know, we'll see. Either this will drive everything to a Medicare for all because it'll be the disaster that we think it will, or we're going to have people with half-assed coverage, you know, and that'll be the end of
it. And you know, that would be the optimum situation, Sandra, if it did result in a Medicare for all scenario. But if you look at the current current districting of the various and sundry several states and their House of Representative districts, the earliest that could possibly happen is 2020.
Yeah. Oh,
basically the 2022 election cycle. And can either of us begin to enunciate the amount of harm and criminal mischief that these miscreants can accomplish in 9 years?
Yeah, well, I mean, I shudder. I have no idea. And anytime I think of another decade in this country, I just, I have no idea. What year is it now? 2013?
Yeah.
So 2023? Can you say sort of, I'll just permafrost? Sorry.
Yeah.
I just saw some video with that madness. I was like, can it get any worse with the sort of feedback loops? I'm sorry, I need to stop discovering this stuff because I'm like, permafrost melting? Hasn't this been frozen for like 500,000 years and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, it has. and it leads you to these terrifying questions like, what awful thing has to happen before people say, oh, wait, the oil industry has been lying to us for the last 50 years? Yes, climate change is real. What one thing has to happen, and how terrible does it have to be, Sandra?
Well, I'm saying, we can't treat, people want to treat this like, the cigarettes execs. It isn't. It's we're talking about tipping over into something where shit's going to be wrong for the next 1,000 years or something real crazy if we don't take care of this in the next 30 years, right? That's the impression I get.
Yeah, well, and those are the conservative estimates, and some of that is being revised downward, I guess you would say, because some of the scientists are saying we deliberately tried not to terrify people. We deliberately tried to make sure that our numbers were conservative, and we're here to tell you that, boy, were we wrong. This is happening a lot faster than we thought.
Oh, yeah, no, I've read some stuff that's, completely just out of this world terrifying with the time frame. So I'll just leave it at that because, it's just the feedback loops is what I'm like. Oh, the sort of the sheer amount of methane, what it could do if it's released. And even, I don't know if you saw that video, but our Secretary of Energy was talking about how we can't let that happen. He looked crazy. I don't know if you've seen the video, too.
Yes. Yeah. No, because this is the kind of thing that keeps Stephen Chu up at night.
Yeah, well, anyway, I gotta ask you if you've seen these stories about the Pope and his boyfriend. Dude is hella fine.
No. I only saw that he was going to get to keep his red Prada shoes.
No. You've got to go to Andrew Sullivan's website, and there's a great article there. They got a picture of his, like his body guy. I mean, the dude is like George Clooney. He is on hit. I'm like, what? So anyway, it's a very funny sort of, Andrew Sullivan outing the Pope, and the stories are not, it's real. Mm-mm. We don't know. But it couldn't happen to a more disgusting institution. That's all I got to say about that. But, yeah, look it up. Go to his website. It's right there, and it's hilarious.
Well, I just did a quick search while we were talking, and I remember way back when Peter Godbold was doing his show, he used to have a guy from I think his name is Bill Balerico, but the Balerico Project, and he's got a story on here that says Andrew Sullivan thinks the Pope is gay, and I suspect he is correct.
Oh, no, but it's very funny. But it was more, I was being shallow, because I was like, damn, that's a good-looking cardinal, whoever he is. Fine as hell. And I'm like, then I read that he is, like, right there with the Pope night and day, day and night. So.
And America Blog, the America Blog, which is not known for necessarily being subtle. Holy Daddy's roommate, the Pope's dreamy manservant sleepover buddy.
Right, and you see a picture of him, you're like, oh, yeah, that guy got it going on.
Oh, yeah, oh, no. Oh. And, I got the picture here now, Sandra.
Yeah,
he's got, some of those guys look really good, and, with the black robes and the red trim and the little necklace hanging.
Oh, looks great.
Yeah.
And you should read the article, because when he talks about the Pope, I'm like, my God, dude is in love. You got to read it. Oh, it's just priceless. So, it's all happening over there.
Yeah, and keeping this guy on staff was part of the exit deal, so hello.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love the way John Aravosis writes it. Andrew Sullivan basically outed the Pope paren again the other day.
Right.
So, oh my God.
Rachel Maddow was talking about it on her show too. So, I don't care. I can give an F about the Catholic Church. It's full of a bunch of child rapists and complete corrupt idiots. So, good riddance to them. Shit, I hope it all falls apart.
Well. It's probably a little too much to hope for, but hope is fine by me.
This is a pretty good body blow. This shit must not be playing that well with this dude retiring.
Everybody thought it was over the secret file that showed that there was a major split inside the Catholic hierarchy that were allegedly led by a bunch of. Militant gay clerics. But Jesus, I'm looking at this picture here of Monsignor Eye Candy mopping the brow of Benedict as he sits in his little chair in his white satin robes.
And don't forget those Prada shoes and bags and whatever else that fool had, and then his
I love the fact that they even got all the way down to negotiating the shoes, and people still have to call him Your Holiness.
Oh, man. Anyway, listen, I have to go, so have a good weekend.
Hey, you too, Sandra. Take care. Bye. From California, our buddy Sandra. Oh, my God. Too much. And this the photo of him getting his holy brow mopped by Monsignor Eye Candy is... there at Andrew Sullivan's blog. Yeah, Marty pointing out that apparently Andrew Sullivan, for whom there's... I got no love lost for him either. I remember the Iraq War, you know. But he's drawn the ire of newsbusters over it. Oh, joy. Jack pointing out the for-profit media, he said, I think MSNBC, actually said the new pope will get the secretary during the day and the old pope will get his nights. Oh, dear. It is about 21 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch on the Horn. And we'll, again, just to reiterate, we will be hopefully debuting the return of Dr. Bill O'Brien to the Horn airwaves come Monday. Beginning at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and various times in between, as well as, I encourage everyone to listen in. It's going to be pretty awesome. I want to go back to an email we got from Robert in Australia a few minutes ago, just because we were talking about climate issues and the madness of the sequester. Robert writes, Hey, Bob. One, just wanted to mention that today, Saturday, March the 2nd, in Australia, is the Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. Who attends? Asks Robert. Mums and dads with their kids, teens, adults, and it's a huge tourist draw. And it all started as a protest march back in the 70s. Gays and lesbians were sick of the way they were treated by the police. Now gay and lesbian police officers march in the parade. Sadly, it's raining rather heavily here in Sydney at the moment. Hopefully it lets up for tonight. And understand what Sandra was saying and what I was agreeing with is that is not to say that there's that I manifest some sort of opposition to marriage. I don't. God, I want it yesterday, marriage equity. But games are being played. And they seem to be being played most astutely by John Boehner. Why did he let the Violence Against Women Act suddenly come up for a vote? You see, the Republican Party will sell its frothing-at-the-mouth, rabid, bigoted, prejudiced base out for a bowl of porridge. The real goal is to destroy the ability of the United States government to govern. And if they have to give a little grudging ground on things like violence against women, or maybe a little bit here and there on marriage equity, they'll do it. Because they feel like, they think, knowing that the Republican Party, have a profound woman problem and a desperately bad gay problem. In other words, they despise both voter groups. That if they give a little bit of ground on either or both, then they can sort of defang the progressive so-called left. Because those groups will then go happily off having said, well, we got what we wanted, we're done now. And that's the question that presents itself for the progressive so-called left. Are we that easily diverted? Are we that easily splintered? Now, the second part of Robert's email. Regarding the sequester, from Wikipedia, a quote. A double dissolution is a procedure permitted under the Australian Constitution to resolve deadlocks between the House of Representatives and the Senate. If the conditions are satisfied, called a trigger, the government of the day can request the Governor General to dissolve both houses of Parliament and call a full election. If, after the election, the legislation is still not passed by the two houses, then a joint sitting of the two houses of Parliament can be called to vote on the legislation. If the legislation is passed by the joint sitting, then the legislation is deemed to have passed both the House of Representatives and the Senate. How eminently sensible that is. Robert notes, a situation such as the sequester would be considered a trigger for a double dissolution. And finally, third, tell Jim I had the same fool call me, telling me my computer was sending his computer error messages. I just said, I don't have a computer, and hung up. Obvious scam. But you see, going back to point two there, there are means by which government may be designed to circumvent problems such as have been deliberately created under in the sequester situation. Here's the sticking point. Here's the problem. The framers of the Constitution in this country were largely brilliant people. And being fairly intelligent, they made certain assumptions because they were inventing a form of government out of thin air, really. They had a few things to look at. They had the Iroquois Confederacy that they could consider. And it was said to have been taken into consideration in the drafting of the Declaration of Independence, despite the fact that Jefferson put in a lot of language about mean, nasty Indians. Had a bunch of blind spots, Thomas Jefferson did. But they made certain assumptions, and one of those assumptions was that the government would operate, even though Madison was terrified of the notion of so-called factionalism, they made assumptions that the people participating in this representatively derived Republic would always operate at some minimum level of good faith. That no one would deliberately torch the government just to watch it burn. That would be so obviously wrong and deleterious and destructive that nobody would do it. And in that assumption, they have been proven in the second decade of the 21st century to have been hopelessly optimistic. You know, by the time Jefferson and Adams died on July the 4th, 1826, both men had largely come to the conclusion, if I understand correctly, that their experiment had changed beyond anything that they ever envisioned. Both men participated in that changing, but looking back, realized that the government that was moving forward was not the government that they framed. That, in fact, the Constitution was, in a way, changing before their very eyes, when it had not even been, even in times when circumstances where it had not been deliberately changed. And the government has continued to change. As I said earlier, I don't think democracy has ever actually happened in this country. I don't see a lot of evidence for it. I mean, granted, and I think it's really wonderful, you have actual democracy taking place in, say, New England town hall-style government. But on a grand scale, no. And so we find ourselves here now with the first sparks beginning to crackle under the tinder of a government that begins to look more and more like it will not survive. And I don't have the prognosticative powers to predict what comes after, except to say that it looks bad, and there doesn't seem to be a remedy in sight. Now, I don't want anybody to go out and, the end is near or anything. But we are living in interesting times, as the old curse goes. And there's not a damn thing in the world that can be done to make the barbarians who are running the House of Representatives behave like folks that you would invite to sit at a table and not throw food. These are decidedly challenging times. And the only advice... This is not one of those advice times. This is not the advice portion of the program. As Kate has noted frequently, I think it's always a good idea to have a few pounds of rice and a few pounds of beans around, maybe a few gallons of clean water. No, maybe. Have some water. There's nothing to suggest that this is the zombie apocalypse. But something is happening to the government here. Something is happening to our social contract. Something is happening to the very idea we maintain as to what the United States means as an entity. There are more nullification bills presently under consideration in state legislatures than there have been at any time since the end of the Civil War. Understand that nullification is something that has been decided. It is settled. It is part of that body of stare decisis about which John Roberts said he was merely going to call balls and strikes, and about which Sam Alito said he was forever dedicated. Well then, if the notion of the primacy of the federal law and the Constitution are being called into question in state after state after state after state by virtue of actual bills proposed to become law. Much like the old adage about infinite monkeys and infinite typewriters, and one of them eventually writing Hamlet, one or more of those nullification laws are going to be passed and enacted into law in one of these proto-Confederate states. And when that happens, it will of necessity have to be challenged. And this goes to the heart of what I was talking about earlier and what Sandra and I discussed. If, when that happens, the Supreme Court behaves as it did recently in regard to the Voting Rights Act, in which a five-member majority more or less telegraphs what it intends to do, and the other four members of the bench be damned, then how do you think they will behave with regard to the well-settled law regarding nullification in this country? Go read up on the so-called nullification crisis. See where it almost took us before we wound up in civil war in 1861. There is another nullification crisis on the horizon. And for us to sit here and say, yeah, well, but I mean, you know, okay, that's not the Voting Rights Act. That's something that's been enshrined in law for 150 years. Surely they wouldn't. Well, yeah, they would, and don't call me Shirley. For all intents and purposes, the Roberts Court overturned 100 years of settled law to create corporate personhood plainly expressed. No longer a matter of some sort of footnote to Santa Clara versus Union Pacific, or Union Pacific versus Santa Clara, whichever way it goes, but a clear statement of corporate personhood that goes all the way back, as we discussed on the show a week and a half or so ago, or a week ago, or whenever, that goes all the way back to the perjury committed before the Supreme Court by Roscoe Conkling in the late 19th century. They overturned 100 years of settled law. They overturned a Montana statute that had been on the books since 1912 to advance corporate personhood. As such, please don't tell me that you have any confidence that the idea of the primacy of the Constitution and federal law as established by Marbury versus Madison is safe. When the barbarians are sticking the family silver in their pockets, nothing is safe. When a religious maniac like Antonin Scalia says that he fears that the states will never be out from under the watchful gaze of Section 5 unless some heroic judge steps in to remedy it, nothing is safe. And when it can be considered, as this is, and this is how it is, when it can be considered that the Voting Rights Act was rendered, it can be rendered a nullity, never having existed, is there any case in federal law, in the decisional history of the Supreme Court, that is safe? If there is, I'm damned to see it. Andy writes in. He says, when talking about the XL pipeline, I have to ask, was building the Auschwitz gas chambers morally or ethically justified because they created good union jobs for German workers? This is how I feel about the XL pipeline. Can helping to bake the planet to a crispy crunch being an accomplice be morally justified? The true issue, the bottom line, game over, and unions supporting the pipeline don't get it and don't want to get it. They're being used as stooges. The good so-called Germans by the oil industry, by the Koch brothers, following through on a divide-and-conquer strategy which has worked for centuries. I heard a union representative, a John Soth, representing the union position on local radio on a local radio show, Your Call, on KALW in San Francisco. The theme of the program was, how can labor and environmentalists come together? And it was a hideous argument from the union side. A pipeline beats shipping by trucks or trains. It is so much safer. But the issue is game over. My girlfriend and I were having the same discussion about gay issues as you and Sandra. Every time working people take a big hit or economic loss in some Washington policy decision, the administration pulls out some advancement in gay rights as a big win. But gay rights transcends parties. As you said, there are many big Wall Street and rich Republican backers of equal marriage and civil rights for gays. There's a lot of pressure within the Republican Party to support gay rights. Overall, gays comprise a high-income portion of our population. Many are Republicans for economic reasons only. You know, the so-called log cabin Republicans. I find no consolation when a vast majority of working people are being crushed economically because a segment of the population can get married, along with all the rights that go along with that, when working people suffer from a sour economy and wage suppression. Good for them, but darn, the 99% continue to be used as a doormat in Washington. Thanks, Andy. Thank you, Andy. It's a cynical kind of politics, isn't it? Don't jinx me, Jack. Jack said, tonight's horn has flown by, and I didn't notice any internet glitches at all. Nor have I. Who knows? Maybe the call to tech support helped. It has flown by, hasn't it? 19 minutes before the hour. We'll go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm back.
Oh, hey, Jim.
Well, speaking of tech support and all that stuff, I had to do a little bit of my own, but I did get my web page back.
Oh, good.
I'll tell you, as these things crown, so do they crucify. You know, going back to what Andy said, that was very, very well spoken or well written. And it's very true.
Well, I think he points up the chimerical quality of the modern trump card in our culture, which jobs.
Well, it's calling selling your birthright for a mess of pottage.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. I heard the interchange between Scalia and the other justice, Soto.
Sotomayor, yes.
Excuse me. I apologize. Please forgive me.
No worries.
And I'll guarantee you one thing. There was nearly a real set to brewing between those two.
I have a feeling it's not pleasant there in the Supreme Court corridors.
I mean, but you know, the complexity or the complexion of the Supreme Court is decided upon who is there. And I pointed out to you the other night, or we pointed out to one another, that John Roberts, in his history with the Reagan Justice Department, he's had this in the back of his mind. And of course, when he took his oath before Congress that he had no agenda, he certainly does have an agenda. And his agenda is to destroy Section 5 of the Civil Rights Act of 1965.
And that in its own right, Jim, is disturbing enough, but I don't think that that is the sum total of the agenda.
Oh, no, no, no. These things always have follows.
I think the real agenda is to completely deconstruct the entirety of the government as we understood it under the Constitution and rebuild it from the ground up in their own twisted vision.
Yeah, they want to create some type of golem in their own image. And it's not good. Not really. Not at all. It's just incredible to see how ineffective our government is. I mean, we saw today on television exactly what they could do. They had a meeting at 10:35 or 10:45 or whenever it was. And what did they accomplish? They had coffee. And they left. No compromise. You had the president saying one thing, saying it's going to be hard, and he wanted to call upon Americans as being residual. Fine. Sounds great for a speech. And then, of course, you had Boehner, when he came out of the White House, making his two bits. Total intransigence, and they're just not going to move off this. And what they're going to do is to do everything they can, the five before, to establish a new order as far as voting rights, but not only voting rights, but also, you know, the gerrymandering and all that kinds of stuff, in order to keep their interest in power. They are afraid of, in my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong here, of the complexion of the population of this country.
Yes, absolutely. They've got 20 years, tops, in which to lock this country away. Because after that, they dwindle into nothingness. I mean, do we really think that the current crop of Republicans are eventually going to be replaced by some minority community? Because I don't see that happening. So that means they've got to steal everything and uproot everything before the new emerging demographic majority in this country can gain access. Real access, meaningful access, Jim, to power.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what happened last November. And that scared the living daylights out of them. I mean, they were so assured of a Republican victory. I mean, they were going nuts when Obama was reelected. And, of course, they knew the source of his the voting source there that put the current president back in the White House, and now they have contrived other means to, number one, undermine his authority, try to put the blame on him, while at the same time, kind of like the Martians invading Earth in War of the Worlds, lay their plans for other internecine schemes by which they can, by hook or crook, maintain their hold on the reins of power. And John Roberts has been after this for the past 30 years.
And understand there's an underpinning that goes with it. He didn't just, that is, that philosophy is not something that just came to him on the road to Damascus, Jim. There is an infrastructure that the right wing began creating in the late 1960s and which was advanced by Lewis Powell before he got onto the Supreme Court in something called the Powell Memo, with which I'm sure you are familiar. And they fostered young legal so-called scholars via things like the Federalist Society.
Yes.
And the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, yeah, all those think tanks they have up there.
And and this is not paranoia. This is not, John, no.
No, I think it's clear recognition of a situation as it is, and
there has been for a generation a very active attempt underway to absolutely destroy the government of the United States as we presently understand it. Now, you have as good or better a grasp of history than I or anyone else in this in this community.
You mean to be a half historian?
So let me just ask you this: What happens to a country? What happens to the structure of a country that undoes everything it understands about how its legal system works? What happens to a country that, instead of declaring nullification to be the insanity that it is, embraces it? What happens, Jim?
Well, you have a complete destruction of society as we know it, and we have wars, and we have all types of conflicts that completely divide the country. That's exactly what happens if the underpinnings are removed.
I mean, take any one of these cases, like the case that says that federal agents may not enforce the bill that says federal agents may not enforce gun laws without the prior approval of the county sheriff. Now, take that all the way to the Supreme Court and watch Scalia and Thomas and Alito and Roberts and Kennedy say, yippers!
Oh, yeah.
What happens when you've got a bad situation, say, you know, a Waco or Ruby Ridge, because those stories are both the darlings of the right wing? What happens if federal agents go in because of a dangerous situation to enforce federal law, and they find the local county constabulary arrayed against them and armed to the teeth?
Well, they're going to rule in favor of the people who...
Well, no, I'm saying the Supreme Court. Assume that the Supreme Court has already ruled and given and breathed life into nullification.
Okay.
So you get that scenario. What's left? The only thing that's left then, Jim, is to start shooting.
Yeah, but the whole thing goes back to one thing, and it's the doctrine of Grover Norquist. They wish to destroy the federal government and drown it in a bathtub. And there are many ways to do that.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to destroy the power of federal agencies, whether it's the FBI, the ATF, or whomever, the DIA, or whomever. And they wish to dismember these agencies or to render them completely impotent. And that's part of the whole thing. That's what they want to do. And,
Can you begin to even imagine what that country looks, sounds, and acts like?
Well, it sounds like some stuff that happened back in the 1930s. It sounds like what happened to the Weimar Constitution in Germany in the 1930s. Does that ring a bell?
A little too much of one, a little too loudly. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't just ravingly paranoid here.
No, I think your fears are quite well founded. And many times I've ranted on this program about fascism and how it came to power and gradually. And, you know, going back to Adolf Hitler, he realized that he couldn't have a revolution in the streets of Munich. So what did he do? He went through the electoral process, was appointed chancellor,
and then began dismantling the government.
And exactly, as soon as von Hindenburg died, he combined the two offices into one, and he became Fuhrer. And that's exactly what...
Jack writes in from Shreveport, Jim, with a very good point. Under the subject line, deconstruct and reconstruct the government, he says, an additional reason for the irrationality... I'm sorry. an additional reason for the irrationally overboard funding of the military by the right wing. If a group's agenda were to take over and reconstruct the U.S. government, and after that the rest of the world, what country would they want to first have control over? It would be that country with the world's most awesome military, and we have that. Would it not be a stretch to think that sociopaths so bent on taking over the United States wouldn't have designs for the entire planet?
Well, I mean, that's what Adolf Hitler wanted to do. I mean, people underestimate him.
Play to America, Morgan DeVeld.
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to absolutely rule the world. I mean, you know, basically, with his plans to rebuild Berlin and put that monstrosity of a Congress Hall up there, it wasn't an eagle holding a swastika in its claws. It was an eagle holding the world. I mean, there are people still who are possessed of these maniacal dreams. And slowly but surely, they are laying their plans and implementing them, little by little, one by one, until all of a sudden the circle is complete. The government, as we know it, has been changed law by law, little by little, until you wake up one morning and you realize that you're not living in the country that you used to know.
Feels like we're getting there, Jim.
I believe so. I believe that's what they're trying to do. And like I said, they are so afraid of the minorities in this country, and this country becoming bilingual and all the other things, they will do anything they can to preserve the hegemony of, and I'm not going to call it by race or whatever, but of their own ilk. That's the way I see it. Maybe I'm wrong. If I am, say I'm wrong. Or
no, I don't see it. I don't see it.
No.
Jim, I will wish you again a good weekend, and we're going to get out of here.
Well, I just thought I would just call back and see if I can get back in touch with you and add a few things.
Well added. Well added.
Well, let's hope that South Carolina doesn't think and go back to the Precambrian Sea. Might do them good.
Yeah, you want to look at Nikki Haley. How long can you tread water?
I don't know. Did that conversation we had the other night ever get back on the air? Because I know it was.
Oh, yeah, it went up on the podcast.
It did, yeah, okay. Well, you know, hey, there may be beach property in Columbia after all. Maybe that's what they want.
It'll sure up the applications for USC, won't it? Go to school at the beach.
Yeah, well, they have Coastal Carolina, Bob. They've already got that, but I mean.
Yeah, but the Coastal Carolina is going to be swampland Carolina.
No, it'll be underwater, absolutely. But, you know, it's just, people need to sit back and think and observe what's happened today and the total inability of our government to function. I mean, someone has thrown...
It has to be contemplated in those terms, Jim. You're absolutely right.
I mean, it's, you know, this term sabot, French for shoe.
Mm-hmm. Saboteur.
And they threw, that's what they would throw into the machine.
There you go. Well, Jim, do have a good weekend, and we'll talk soon.
I hope. You take care. Have a good weekend. What are your plans?
Pretty quiet. Got some work to do around the house.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, hope it gets done.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
Jim, second time around, and well done. It is time to get out of here. A little reminder, the Horn Molloy Skype group will, I assume, be in its usual rare form around 12:05 a.m. Eastern time this evening. Thanks to Sparky for serving as moderator there. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for help with the posts. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW. ACHECT.net and ACHECT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. And thanks to you for keeping all of this going. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And now it's time for Rick Smith on the Horn.